my song. Let's sing it. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Come on, it's gonna be freaking awesome. You know the words. It's gonna be freaking awesome. That's it, say. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Yeah!
It's gonna be freaking awesome, everyone. Because today we are counting down 50 geek culture film classics for you to watch if you haven't seen, or you to watch with your kids. These are 50 movies that I grew up with. To put in the classic category, I went back 20 years, so all of this stuff is basically before 2000. Actually, there's two on the end of the list that are like 2002s, but they're all encapsulate what I like to think of as geek culture, which tends to be worlds. Fantasy worlds, science fiction worlds. I think that us geeks, we love to find a nice cozy cave that we can crawl into and imagine the deep depths of the cave. You know, Lord of the Rings is appreciated by the fandom like no other because of the great lengths that J.R.R. Tolkien went to create a mythology. I'm going to open up this show with a letter from a fan because I think this goes exactly with what we're talking about today. They wrote me at jesseblaze@jessesnyder.com, and I hope you will too. I really want to get some feedback, especially on this episode of today's show. I realized there's a ton of major geek culture films that I know about, like, say, The Last Starfighter or that aren't going to be on this list. And it's not because I don't love them. And even Conan the Barbarian, I took off the list, too, because I don't, I don't think I've ever actually seen the whole thing. And I'm embarrassed to say this to some of my geek friends. But I literally had a movie DVD collection that was, I don't know, like 2,000 strong when DVDs were a thing. I see a movie or two every week. I have, you know, the pass for the Regal. I used to work at Blockbuster Video for a few years. I've seen thousands and thousands of movies. And still, having seen thousands and thousands of movies, I've missed plenty. So I would love to get some recommendations because I'm going to do a follow-up list to this list that I'm doing here today on these 52 classic movies. Well, there's two bonus ones that are funny. And I want to do a follow-up where I want to do movies that I've never seen that I know of as geek classics, and I want to watch them fresh and see if they hold up. Let's get on to this letter. This is Spaghetti Brother 420, which is a great name. Jesse, I am somewhat of a new geek. I was a fan of the live-action Spider-Man, The Incredible Hulk with Lou Ferrigno, and He-Man. I don't read comic books, but wanted to try getting into it, as I've heard you say they are much better than the movies. I also have a group of friends who have a geek culture committee who I drink beers with and want to contribute to the conversation. Is there a good starting point for a new geek? Thanks, man. Spaghetti Brother 420. And he's got a PS, which I'll address in a second. So yes, brother, one of the best ways to get into comics is through Batman. Batman has a really rich and wonderful lore, and I would recommend to everybody simply because it's kind of just a surprising, artful, interesting, cool murder mystery that you get a copy of Batman the Long Halloween and put it in anybody's hands. The fact that Warner Brothers has not adapted this film, like, it's mind-blowing to me. It's right there what they need to do to get people in and create the atmosphere. Jeff Loeb, who is one of the head Marvel executives, if you remember that name, who produces Marvel TV, he's a brilliant writer, and he is also known for a very big story with Jim Lee called Hush that is popular. People might have read that. That's also a good one to read. Beautiful, if you like the look of those bombastic 90s comic books where everything was coming at you and everybody had pouches on their costumes. That's a great one. But Jeff Loeb works a lot with this artist who basically nobody else works with, named Tim Sale. And I love Tim Sale's work. I recommend anything that Tim Sale does. It's so interesting. He has this super abstract style, just where everything is formed by these very simple shapes. But in the case of the Batman characters and the villains, he gives them all so much character by turning them into these amplified caricatures, but not. When you see it, you'll be like, wow, this is really beautiful. And you're going to love to look at it. And you're going to enjoy the hell out of the story. And it's going to just kind of throw you into the pit of Batman that's existed for all this time. You know, that was always the weird thing. When you jump into the X-Men comic books, it'd be like, what the hell is going on? When you jumped into the Batman comics, when they were written by the right person, it was just like, what is going on? You just wanted to know. You're going to want to understand more. And Jeff Loeb just does this masterful job of just writing some kick-ass Batman with this beautiful art from Tim Sale. I really, to anybody who's looking for a comic book to start off with, oh, get that. Get that. It's really, 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 really great. And then I have to recommend Kevin Smith, who I know has become a controversial figure, as so many people do as they get older. But Kevin did a great job with Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti, this art team that had been working together for a long time in the independent comics world. Joe and Jimmy were in charge of Marvel Knights. This was my entrance into comic books. These three creators, three creative teams, I should say, on Black Panther, The Inhumans, written by Paul Jenkins, who I'm very glad to say is a friend of mine, brilliant writer, and Jay Lee, who is a great artist. Their Inhumans series is an amazing, great one to start on, and a great one, again, that you go, this is a comic book? Holy crap. This is cool. This is great. This is not stupid. There's nothing infantile about this. This is, wow, this is so deep and meaningful, and I can see why people like comic books. You know, I came in this phase of comics, you know, in that one, and another book by Christopher Priest and Mark Texiera. Gorgeous. Mark Texiera's artwork is gorgeous. It's like painted, again, another artist who you're like, what is this? His stuff looks like it's carved from stone. It's beautiful, just beautiful. And very smart, Christopher Priest's run on the book. I mean, it was even like too smart for me. I had dropped it at a certain point because I was just like, I'd lost track of the story and I couldn't remember what was going on because, you know, if you read it in a trade paperback, much easier to follow everything. I ended up just missing it in my life, the sort of character of the book, and I would always be looking at it going, I should be reading this. And I went back and I got all the issues and they're really great. I just kind of lost track of the story at some point. And then the one that I first recommended, and I recommend this because it goes for so long, and that is, it starts with Kevin Smith, Joe Quesada, Jimmy Palmiotti's Daredevil. It's beautiful looking. Joe and Jimmy do some really interesting things. They have a bit of a cartoon style, but it's a really edgy and cool cartoon style. It works so well on Daredevil. Bullseye was one of my favorite characters in comics. My love for the character of Bullseye starts right here. Actually, that's not true, because there were these Marvel trading cards, and I had seen pictures, and I knew of a lot of different characters, because I love action figures, and everybody keeps telling me that I should talk about my love of action figures on the show one day, and I'm like, guys, I don't want to look like a complete geek. I'm supposed to be the coolest. See, but that's how, see, what, how lame am I being, actually, by pretending like I'm not surrounded by action figures right now as I record this podcast? I am. I am surrounded by action figures. The Wrecking Crew is staring me in the face at the moment. I'm still missing Thunderball. I need to get him. for those of the real geeks in the house. But really wonderful. The entire Marvel Knights, the initial run, I recommend the trade paperback for the Inhumans. The recommend the trade paperback for the Sentry, which is a follow-up thing that Paul Jenkins and Jay Lee did together, which was awesome. Love the Sentry as well. Oh, even though they changed him a lot since then. And the Sentry that you're going to see on screen is probably not going to be anything like the Sentry that I love from the comics, I promise you. Unfortunately. But the Daredevil trades go on beyond just Kevin Smith. It continues with a story by David Mack and Brian Michael Bendis. Actually, I don't know if Brian Michael Bendis was involved. I think he is. And then there's a run by Bob Gale, who's the writer of Back to the Future. He came in and did a little six-issue run with Phil Winslade, who's got a totally different style. And David Mack does watercolors, and Phil Winslade, I don't know, he's got this like shriveled raisin style of art. It's very cool. I can only describe it like that. But these runs are good. Really good. The first one is great. The Kevin Smith thing is great. And then these two things are good. And then what comes after it is amazing. I mean, and just sort of like amazing, amazing, amazing after amazing, with one or two crappy stories along the way, like when Daredevil gets possessed by a demon. But Brian Michael Bendis goes to take over the writing on Daredevil, and it is the greatest writing of his career. And he's written a ton of amazing books, especially independent books for Marvel and DC. A lot of his Marvel and DC stuff is kind of meandering, meaning going on for a long time, like, and like wastefully, not really getting a lot done. His independent books are not like that generally, and are very good. I'd recommend in particular with Brian Michael Bendis, Torso. Torso's awesome. It's like kind of like the movie Seven, again showing some things that comic books can do that it would blow your mind. It was blowing my mind. I had judged comic books as a lesser art form, and I just didn't believe what was possible in the art form for a little while. And the only comic book that I read was a book called Savage Dragon. But Eric Larson loves the comic book art form so much. Reading his letters column, he really started to make me love and appreciate the art form. When I started working at 7-Eleven and there was a newsstand, I started reading Deadpool because I heard that was a funny comic book. And that was what eventually led me to this Marvel Knights thing, because it was a promotion that was happening at the time when Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti took over as editors for this little section. So if you want to get into Marvel Comics, start with those Marvel Knights era comic books, Black Panther as well, from Christopher Priest. They're all collected in the trades, and you should be able to find any of them. If you want to get into DC comic books, start with Batman The Long Halloween. And if you want to get a little bit deeper beyond that, check out JLA by Grant Morrison and Howard Porter. That goes on for a while, and then Mark Waid picks up some slack. And by the way, if you read deep into the Daredevil run, Mark Waid picks up some slack over there, doing some of the best work of his career. Great, 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 great. I mean, if you want to skip the Kevin Smith stuff, honestly, you can go straight to the Mark Waid stuff. It's great. But if you really want to ride, like, because the Brian Michael Bendis stuff is incredible, but the Mark Waid stuff is different on another level. Daredevil has long been a marquee title for Marvel Comics, so it's a really good place to check some work out. Because generally speaking, they always put their best people on those books. And to this moment right now, one of my longest running partnerships in comic books is Marco Cicchetto. He and I broke into comic books at the same time. The Deadpool story that I wrote, he and I have been friends ever since. We enjoyed working together, and he's helped me out along the way. Shout out to Marco. Love you, man. You're the best. He's been working on Daredevil for a little while now, doing an incredible run. So, I mean, seriously, if you want to enjoy, like, hey, man, there's a great show you can watch, and there's, like, 70 seasons. Just, you could start with that Kevin Smith. And at the same time, though, some people might tell you to, what? No, go start with the Frank Miller stuff. And I'm not going to tell you not to read the Frank Miller stuff. The Frank Miller stuff, I think, is great. I do think that the style that it's written in is a little bit old school for some people who, you might be trying to get into comic books. So I don't always recommend people start with the Frank Miller stuff. I kind of feel like it's, again, another one of those great things where you dive in and Daredevil already has a little bit of history. It's really enjoyable the same way The Long Halloween is. And you check that out. And for an independent option, I'm just going to stick with Brian Michael Bendis and Torso, which was mind-blowing to me when I read it, because it was just this little indie book, but it was how Brian had proven himself, and he co-wrote it with dude who's a friend of mine, Mark Andraco, brilliant writer in his own right. He wrote a series called Manhunter for DC for many years. That was a great series there. It's a detective series. It stars some of the characters from The Untouchables, Elliot Ness, having the experience of dealing with America's first serial killer and loosely based on real events. Torso, highly recommend that one as well. Okay. P.S. from Spaghetti Brother 420. I heard you talking about your dad on last week's show. I didn't know Dee Snider from Twisted Sister was a geek. What is he like? Yeah, Dee Snider from Twisted Sister. I wonder if he likes being called that. Dee Snider from Twisted Sister. I think he's probably past that now. Dee Snider, published author, screenwriter, radio man, voiceover actor, personality. He's so many things, my father. I adore him. Yeah, he taught me all I know. So much of my fandom comes from him. You know, I mean, I always thought comic books and superheroes and those kind of things were cool, because I knew he thought they were cool, but I just didn't like to read. I had a seeing eye problem. I had like glasses for over focusing because reading used to make me get headaches. But at a certain point in time, that went away from having the glasses, and I grew to enjoy reading. I had been exposed to comic books because I collected trading cards and I liked action figures and sort of just imagining worlds and stuff. So eventually I got into them all because of him. There's a few different loves that come from him. Star Trek is a big love of mine. You know, I've taken every one of the loves that he's given me to unhealthy levels. But, you know, he's a big old school Star Trek fan. I grew up watching that before I would go to bed. I would be watching Star Trek and the Honeymooners. And I ended up falling in love with The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager and all of these. Some of my favorite serialized television is the Star Trek series. That, and I recommend that to anybody still to this day, go enjoy it. It's just a totally different vibe. It's going to make you think. If you like the Twilight Zone, essentially Star Trek is just every episode's a kind of sweet, positively skewed Twilight Zone. Although, you know, sometimes it does get pretty dark. His loves are so expansive. I've kind of just kind of kept building that out. The things that I generally tend to not be super fan of, and the things that my father's generally not super fans of, are just majorly mainstream sort of things, with the exception of Starbucks. He loves Starbucks. I hate Starbucks, but I love their sandwiches. forgive me for laughing at myself so often on this show. It's always that, like, you're sitting here, I'm in a room by myself, and I'm talking to myself. So sometimes it's like people are wincing and you're laughing at the fact that people might be wincing at some terrible joke you make, or you're going, oh man, maybe I made them laugh, and you're laughing at that. But like, it's always a weird experience when I sit here and I just start doing the thing. All right, so we are going to get into this list of the 52 classic geek culture films that every geek must see. And keep in mind, I gave out my email, jesseblaze@jessesnyder.com. If I miss something, hit me back. Granted, I'm going to break this into two. I'm going to do the first 26, 25, and a bonus for this episode today. And then I'm going to do another 25 in the next episode. You know, and films is totally something my dad's got me into as well. He would go out on the road, and they used to have a huge, a huge trunk filled with VHS tapes of their favorite films, largely comedies. My dad loves westerns, action movies, just all their favorite stuff, you know, on VHS. And they would watch these things over and over and over. and be quoting these films all the time. There's actually a number of films on the list here today that are films that are quoted to this day on any tour bus that my father might be riding on. And if you want to hang out with Dee Snider, the best thing you can do is brush up on your Mel Brooks and your Monty Python and Blues Brothers and Three Amigos, because that's his love language. All right. So I've got it broken down into some of like the biggest franchises and the years in which these things have started up, sort of like the biggest groups of films and whatnot. I'm going to start it that way. And the first one, number one on the with a bullet on the list, and if you include them together, I believe it's 8 films, and that is Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. Steven Spielberg and George Lucas working together in particular on the films Indiana Jones, and The Last Crusade, which is my favorite of the franchise, and I know a lot of people's favorites. Temple of Doom, which is apparently a prequel, which I didn't realize at the time. I just watched it recently with my girlfriend, and she loves that movie. It's one of her favorites. And I know Raiders of the Lost Ark is a favorite of many other people. That is a major geek franchise, imagining, exploring, going out to the world, and finding a glimmer of magic. You know, I think the reason why people didn't really like the 4th Indiana Jones was because the glimmer wasn't magic. It was science fiction, and it wasn't like a little hint of science fiction. It was like full dive into the science fiction. If you remember the ending of that movie, the pyramid's breaking down and you see an alien wave hi to him or something. It pulls out of the pyramid. It was really over the top. But those first 3 movies are reserved in a wonderful way. They just all have a hint of magic about them, and they're wonderful. They're really, really wonderful. I'm not going to subject myself to the upcoming Indiana Jones movie because I don't want to tarnish these films, and I really think The Last Crusade was such a perfect end to the whole thing, so I'm done. But those 3 movies are awesome, worth sharing with anybody. Go check those out, as well as the 3 Star Wars films. And I don't think I have to sit here and talk to you a lot about the Star Wars films. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of the Star Wars films. I honestly almost took 2 of them off the list because my kids have not really responded very well to Star Wars. And I'm nervous that they might not like the first one. Okay, I'm going to reveal the trick. I'm going to use this list over the summer, and I'm going to try to watch as many of these movies as I can with the kids, and then I'm going to take 2 of them aside, and we're going to have them review the movies, because I'm really interested to see what the kids think of all these films. And in thinking that way, I almost got rid of the first one and the 3rd one, because I think they're weak compared to the 2nd one, and I just want to entice them. I want them to become geeks like me. I have an opportunity here because they all have YouTube channels, and they're practicing being in this space, you know, talking, you know, on camera and things like that, and they're really good at it, and I want to be able to encourage them. So I have this opportunity, because sometimes they don't want to watch the movies that I want to show them, but now they're into it because we're going to do it and they're going to get interviewed and their opinion matters. So I'm really excited to watch all these things with them. And I was this close, but I decided to keep all 3 of the Star Wars films on the list, because it's just, who can deny that these are 3 of the most important films in the fandom? And there's so much deeper extended universe stuff outside of the Disney Star Wars stuff that so many people loathe that people would love. Novels and comic books and everything. There's a huge fan base. You know, the big thing with all this stuff is, does it have longevity? Did it create space? Are there similar things like it? Yeah, Indiana Jones, there's Uncharted, one of the biggest games there is, and then turned into a big film. You know, adventure films, of course, yes. It created, well, there's plenty of stuff before then too, but certainly there's a lot of things trying to be Indiana Jones. There's a lot of things that have gone on to try to be as Star Wars as they could possibly be. Continuing on with Steven Spielberg himself, we've got Jaws and Jurassic Park. These 2 movies are, you know,
close in the real world, but they are crossovers. And, you know, obviously whole fandoms and mythology for Jurassic Park that they've squandered, really. But that first movie creates so much magic and, you know, really lovingly based on that book, done really well. And, you know, and Jaws, that first Jaws, it goes off the rails. But I love the freaking the Meg. I can't wait to see the sequel to that. I love giant monster movies. And you can't say that Jaws hasn't given birth to so many other wonderful, frivolous thrills. Very rarely has anything done justice to what Jaws does. But I think the Meg does. I really like the Meg. that's a recent favorite of mine. And my son, Cassidy, he loves the monster movies. And I love going to see those with him because we just have the best time. So, you know, thank you to Jaws. That's an important one. And Jurassic Park, man. Oh, when you watch it, it just makes you so sad for the practical effects. The death of the practical effects in these movies is just such a tragedy, and I wish that they would go back to the way they were making them before. All right, next up, we've got Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And by the way, Jaws, the first one on the list, this is 75, so is Holy Grail. So this is 1975. You know, this is like, there was a lot of sensational science fiction stuff back in the day. Some of these really cool, big budget, mainstream films. These, I really believe, is sort of the beginning of this creative renaissance that happens in Hollywood in a lot of ways with Spielberg and George Lucas, and people seeing that there's an interest in these stories that had generally been in comic books. You know, a lot of what Star Wars is stuff from pulp comics. John Carter from Mars, and they have been handled really lovingly here. You know, from the Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park. I don't know who wrote the Jaws book, but I know that's based on a book as well. All of these things are adaptations, the beginning of adaptations. And then Holy Grail and The Life of Brian represent to me, and Life of Brian, what is, 79, so just a couple years later. They represent to me the beginning of that intelligent humor. Something that is about the concepts and the ideas being twisted around in interesting ways. And Monty Python has given birth to South Park and plenty others, you know, of absurdist comedy, premise-based comedy, even something like, you know, I think Young Frankenstein, you know, a premise-based comedy where you're taking something seriously, and the fact that you're taking something ridiculous seriously is what's making the laughs generate. Rick and Morty, you know, I mean, really just like everything funny is this stuff. And I know some people go back and see the Monty Python stuff and they don't necessarily get it. I really think everybody deserves to, or I should say the Monty Python guys, they deserve you to watch it twice. Go watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail and Life of Brian at least twice. I tried it out on my kids a while back. I showed them Monty Python, Holy Grail, and they did not get it until the very end. There's a scene where they approach what's called the Bridge of Death, and I don't want to give anything away. But suffice to say, they started busting laughing. They finally got it after just joke after joke after joke, and they're looking at me like, what does this mean? And finally, they get it. They're busting their asses laughing, and my littlest child stops me in the hallway the next day, and she's like, stop! Whoever approaches the Bridge of Death must answer me these questions three, or the other side, he see. Because they had made us watch it a bunch of times. So I was so proud, and you'll be happy to put it on for your kids or anybody. I really think that it's important to understand comedy and like some of these things, and to really like get back to getting some of these things that are very simple and fun. It's worth your time. There's a lot of fun to be had in the world of Monty Python, and those two films, I think, encapsulate the intelligence that's on display here, especially to The Life of Brian, which covers a Jesus-like figure's rise to worship. And there's just so many funny scenes in it, so much witty and intelligent things being said. Really, go watch it. Okay. Moving on, we're getting over to how about Superman, number four on my list in 1978. We had Superman and Richard Donner's Superman. Oh, it's everything that was wrong with Man of Steel is right with Richard Donner's Superman. And oh, he just nails the hope and the sweetness. The only problem with Richard Donner's Superman was they just never gave him anything sort of interesting to contend with. They should have did something with Brainiac. They should have done something from the comics. The film series goes really off the rails after the first one, which gets the tone right completely. And they've still not been really great about fixing that problem with Superman and giving him interesting villains to fight. You can't have him fighting human beings all the time. It just is boring. You need him fighting monsters and aliens and robots, and that's what makes the visual compelling. The visual is not compelling when Lex Luthor has Superman powers now, or Zod comes down and he's got Superman powers, or you make up another guy who's got Superman power. Everybody can't have Superman powers. Then Superman's not special. So the approach that they've taken has been really rough. But this first film in Warner Brothers' attempt to capitalize on Superman with Christopher Reeves was incredible, remains incredible, and you should check it out. Richard Donner, in particular, is great. One of my favorite directors. I love Richard Donner. He's made a lot of other movies. I think, the Lethal Weapon franchise. And I think he had done Maverick, which is another one I love. The other Richard Donner movie on this list, which is later in 85, is Goonies, which I didn't know he made that movie. So I literally, as I say it out loud, I'm like, maybe that's wrong because it seems wrong, but apparently he did. Goonies is great. It really puts you in that time of like that young 80s geek kind of outcast place. And I think it's a geek classic. I think it's not necessarily actually one of my favorite movies. I always kind of had an aversion to it because I didn't like how Sean Austin was using a inhaler in the film. And I had asthma and he made me feel like I was weak and I didn't want to be weak because I was a nerd and he was a nerd and he had asthma and I had asthma. I was like, this is too real. So I didn't like the movie, but I know that people love it and I thought it was important to include it on this list. And I do think it holds up as a geek culture classic. Thank you, Richard Donner, for those two. Next up, we got the Muppet movie in 1979, and I'm going to go through a whole bunch of sort of Muppet movie related. We can call this the Jim Henson touch list here. Some of the greatest geek culture films of all time. The Muppet movie, this is the Jim Henson moving into a full feature of featuring the Muppet characters for the first time. And they knock it out of the park. There's a lot of great things going on here, a lot of great humor. Nobody can live and not be introduced to the Muppets, okay? And don't introduce them in a shitty way by one of these shitty shows. Although, I've only watched a couple episodes so far of this Electric Mayhem show, and I've been very pleasantly surprised so far. They've been doing a great job. Shout out to Bill Beretta, who I know is leading the way there in a lot of ways. And it's pretty good. If you're a Muppets fan, I give permission to go check out the Electric Mayhem show on Disney Plus. I've been really enjoying it. The Muppet movie is great. It's got great music in it as well. I'm very picky about music because of consistency. And consistently, the Muppets have been able to produce a lot of amazing original music. And if you check out this film, you'll get exposed to some of it. Some of the sweetest moments in cinema history. Also on this list, you've got Sesame Street Presents Follow That Bird with Big Bird. It's a very moving movie. It's a kid's movie, but it's got a lot to say. Really sticks with you as a kid. And I think it holds up and is really an elevated piece of Muppet art here. I really believe the Muppets in general are very important to bring into your life an idea of surrealism, something that you can't quite figure out the way you can figure out people and read people. There's something very egoless about a puppet that I think helps the storytelling the same way comic books help storytelling, because, you know, Oscar the Grouch doesn't necessarily look like that grouchy guy, you know. He looks like a grouch. You know, it's like grouchiness personified instead of a human being, who I think it's easier to kind of hate on human beings, and it's a little bit easier to accept representations of things. And the Muppets are wonderful representations of things, especially in movies like The Dark Crystal, which I think is just sort of an artistic masterpiece, even if it fails a little bit in some of the writing areas. The prequel series that was made for Netflix recently is unbelievable. It's so good, so lovingly done, so beautiful in the same way that Dark Crystal is, but even more so. I kind of recommend that even more, actually, because it's a prequel. So maybe watch that first and then watch The Dark Crystal and try to appreciate it for the time period in which it came out. Dark Crystal's releasing in, what, 82? The year I was born. So, I mean, 40 years ago. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful movie. And then also beautiful and maybe just a little bit hokier, kiddier, but still worthwhile, with some great music. And David Bowie is the Labyrinth, and Jennifer Connelly. Oh, she's so dreamy. I love me some Jennifer Connelly. I had a crush on her for a long time because she was in a Muppet movie, and I like, she's beautiful. Yeah, no, that movie's great, and I challenge any little boy not to fall in love with Jennifer Connelly, and any little girl not to fall in love with all of the Muppet characters, especially Pluto. Yeah, you will love The Labyrinth. All right, continuing on. Two movies that, it's funny, I thought that both of these were Henson Creature Shop. As it turns out, there were scheduling conflicts or whatever else, and I guess creative differences about how to do it. And Frank Oz of the Muppets, he's the voice of Miss Piggy and the puppeteer behind Fozzie and Sam the Bald Eagle and Animal and most of your favorite characters, Bert and so many. Anyway, he made a film called The Little Shop of Horrors, featuring the music of Howard Ashman, based on Howard Ashman's, I guess, off-Broadway play. It's really funny because this movie's like an adaptation of an adaptation of an adaptation, because there's an older movie with Jack Nicholson called Little Shop of Horrors, and I guess he took that, licensed it, and made music for it as a novel idea, which I think is a pretty clever way to go about doing it. And for those of you who don't know, Howard Ashman is also the songwriter behind The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin. He died way too young. Rest in peace, Howard Ashman. As for The Little Shop of Horrors, for me, hands down, it is the single greatest musical of all time. If you ever get the opportunity to see The Little Shop of Horrors on Broadway or anywhere, go see Little Shop of Horrors. It's the best. And watch Frank Oz's, he directed it and worked with the puppeteers. The puppeteering is incredible. The puppets themselves are incredible and so lifelike. Steve Martin's incredible as the dentist. Everybody's incredible in this movie. Rick Moranis, and it just, the list goes on. There's so many little cameos, and it's wonderful. Watch the director's cut if you can. It's amazing. It's different ending, an additional song or whatever, and it's, yeah. Watch the director's cut. That one's the better one. Little Shop of Horrors is the best. Actually done by the Creature Shop was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was very disappointing for people who were watching the cartoons, for us to not get Bebop and Rocksteady, who are the rhinoceros and punk rock pig with the 3D glasses on. So we were all a little bummed about that. But Casey Jones is handled so well. The turtles are handled so well. The animatronics, again, another movie that makes you miss practical effects. These Ninja Turtles, they look awesome. They look real. They have a lot of personality. The voices were great. The way it's shot's great. The tone of it, all very cool. And Shredder, Splinter, it's just, it totally brings to life that comic book. A very early and wonderful independent comic book adaptation done correctly. All right, moving on to other films. We've got Alien and Legend, both by Ridley Scott. Beautiful films. Alien, H.R. Giger's art, incredible. Ellen Ripley kicking ass there, played by Sigourney Weaver. One Alien, you know, similar to Jaws, it's sort of reserved, but this process, it just killing this whole ship, tearing it apart. One of the early amazing science fiction horror films done so well, so beautifully, really beautiful and cool movie artistically, as is Legend, an early fantasy film done really, really great. Tim Curry plays the darkness. He's freaking amazing. By the way, I don't have a list of names or anything, directors or I've got like a list of a couple of these things, like years and stuff, because I have trouble with that sometimes. But this is all from my memory because I love these movies that much. I'm just trying to say, the guy Robert Picardo plays a character who jumps out of the swamp and attacks Tom Cruise at some point, called Meg Mucklebones, and you'd never recognize it as Robert Picardo. That dude's incredible. Robert Picardo, for those of you who don't know, famously played the holographic generated doctor on board the Voyager, and he was one of the best parts of the Star Trek Voyager series, his ongoing and growing sentience. He's a really, really great character actor, and here he plays a bog witch, a green bog witch with big droopy boobies, and he's incredible. You can't even tell it's him. But yeah, Legend, I mean, that movie is just beautiful. I can't say the story is necessarily the most compelling anything, but you just can't take your eyes off of it all. It's just so lovely. It looks beautiful. Anyway, moving on into the 80s here. In 81, you've got the kickoff of the Evil Dead franchise. The Evil Dead franchise is incredible, introducing Bruce Campbell to the world, and he's the gift that keeps on giving, of course. I wondered if should I not put this on the list? It's a horror film. But no, this is like a really important one for geek culture, especially because by the time you hit Army of Darkness, where we get this really elevated, high-minded, fourth wall-breaking comedy and supernatural stuff and fantasy stuff, it really crosses into our territory, and I think that's why it's become such a beloved fan favorite in geek culture. You always see people cosplay as Ash or Evil Ash from Army of Darkness at conventions. So Evil Dead is dark as hell. If you're freaked out easily, it'll freak you out. And Evil Dead 2 is freaky but funny, and you're just sort of, it's just all kind of leaves you, it's very just kind of disturbing because it's so funny and creepy. It's still very creepy, but Army of Darkness is hysterical, really, really funny and over the top. And what an interesting journey it is to go from like so deadly serious to quirky to funny. And I think that's the magic of Sam Raimi, the director, and that series, and Bruce Campbell playing Ash and all of it. I highly recommend those three. And I'm excited to see what my children are going to think of those ones. Granted, some of these, if they're too much for the little kids, I'm just going to watch them with my older kids. My oldest son, Cassidy, he loves horror movies. And Logan tends to be a little scared of this stuff. But I think she's getting old enough that she can handle a few of these scary movies for some reviews. All right. Getting towards the end of our list, because you know I'm only going to do 26 this time, and I'll do 26 next time. So actually, if I'm counting right, these last two will be 24 and 25, and then we're going to do a bonus. So 24 and 25, John Carpenter enters the list with The Thing and Big Trouble in Little China. The Thing has a lot of sci-fi elements and suspense. The Thing's probably, I think, the best horror film of all time. I'm a big fan of Alien and Aliens and some of the other ones on this list, but The Thing, really viscerally scary and interesting and compelling. If you've never seen The Thing, ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one. And it's scary. And I generally don't like being scared. I'm a little bit of a scaredy cat, but I love that movie. And Big Trouble in Little China, what a fun one. That's another one that gets quoted on the tour buses with Mr. D. Snyder and his ilk a lot. Big Trouble in Little China. It's just so quotable and quirky and fun. Kurt Russell and his talking in the third person, Jack Burton. It's just, that movie is awesome. If you have not seen that movie, see it. If you haven't seen the music video that they did with Lopan, David Lopan style. Oh my God. David Lopan style. This thing has the highest production. It looks like a follow-up to Big Trouble in Little China in a lot of ways, except it's a dance video, and this is hysterical. If you haven't seen that, go seek it out on YouTube or whatever. Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Yeah, Big Trouble in Little China is a must. I'm really excited to see if my kids get it, if they find it funny. I know the thing is going to scare the shit out of them, but will they get the humor of Big Trouble in Little China? Well, speaking of humor, this is a bonus one for this episode, and then we'll do the other 25 and a bonus for next episode. But the bonus for this one, because Star Wars is on the list, we must introduce our children to Spaceballs. And if you haven't seen Star Wars and Star Trek and then watched Spaceballs, oh my God, you know, you're not understanding any of the jokes if you're not watching those shows. All right, well, that's the first 25 of our 50 classic geek culture films before the 2000s. I'm really excited to play these guys for my kids, and I'm really excited to see what they have to say about them and share that with you guys over the summer. This is just like a little book report I'm doing with my kids to help teach them about podcasting and YouTubing and doing all this kind of stuff. And I'm really excited just for the excuse to work with them intimately and get their opinions on some of the things that make my heart beat so fast. Anyway, before I go, I'm going to direct you to the King of Kings Kickstarter that I have together for a comic book I'm going to be launching in a couple weeks now. I was going to maybe push another comic book in front of it, but it's taking a little bit longer to happen than I'd like it to. So I guess I'm just going to do the King of Kings Kickstarter first. So if you want to be notified when that goes live, again, it's a comedy, a religious farce. If you want to joke about religion and music, and if you're into thinking and laughing, if you're into Monty Python already, you might really like my comic book, King of Kings, that I've done with some wonderful creative friends of mine. So please go to Kickstarter, type in King of Kings number one, and sign up for notifications, because that's going to go live soon. Anyway, I love you for listening. I thank you for rating or commenting, and I appreciate kind words that I've already received. I just love living in this space, and I want more people to come join us here, where there is the possibility of things getting better, as opposed to where they're living right now, where there doesn't really seem to be a possibility that things are ever going to get any better. I choose to believe things are going to get better, and I believe it's people like us who believe in myths like these that will make the difference in that. Anyway, thank you for joining me again on another fabulous episode of The Coolest Geek Alive! You've been listening to Coolest Geek Alive with me, your host, Jesse Blaze Snyder. Don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe for more excellent geek culture content. Thanks for listening. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Coolest Alive. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Stay with your tribe. Awesome. Revenge of the Geeks. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Week after weeks. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Laughing with you. It's gonna be freaking awesome. And crying sometimes too. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Spilling it out. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Making you shout. Talking some shit. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Living legit. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Food in our mouth. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Getting a mouth. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Tell all your friends. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Draw right our text. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Raising the bar. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Straight to the stars. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Awesome!
Friggin' awesome! It's going to be friggin' awesome! Just wait! You'll see! You'll all see!
You'll all see.